And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, I'm talking about Alabama. Y'all, I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. Hey, before I go any further, I got to tell you about one of our newest sponsors, Inspire Advisors. So stand by here. I'm going to tell you about something big, and I'm going to give you something free. You ready? This being the crazy world that it is, here you are working hard, setting aside for your retirement, and also trying to stand up for your beliefs. But what if you found out, though, in the middle of doing all that, that some of your investments were going to things that you say you don't believe in? It happens all the time. So maybe, though, it's time in that regard for you to meet Paul Breyer and the team of PhDs at Inspire Advisors. I mean, they've got incredible skills. I'm talking about financial planning that considers who you are and what you believe in, as well as your bottom line. Solid local experts, biblically responsible investing, data-driven strategies to maximize your return, and they do it, by the way, in a way that impacts your bottom line, but yes, also the world in which you live. This is what I call like absolute financial freedom. So here's that free thing I was talking about. You can go online to their website and get a free impact report and see how your portfolio currently stands up under scrutiny. A free impact report at www.moneypatternwealth.com. That's moneypatternwealth.com. You can also go, by the way, to the rightsideradio.org website. Click on the sponsors tab and then just click on their logo. It takes you straight to their website. So yeah. Inspire Advisors, moneypatternwealth.com, conservative, godly, balanced financial freedom with Inspire Advisors. Check them out. All right, so let me jump on into the next dipper, and I'll open by saying, in a minute I'm going to tell you about two cities in Alabama that just came out on the bad list, the list you don't want to be on, the list of cities that have the highest crime rates in the nation. We have two cities from Alabama. In fact, of the top five, we're the only state with two cities on this list of the highest per capita crime in the nation. Not good. Interesting thing is they come from one county. You're probably already zeroing in on who this is. But let me just talk about safe streets for a minute, because the tendency among Democrats is to just go soft on crime. And don't try and deny it. It's true. Absolutely. Just soft on crime. It always seems to be more about the criminal and less about the victim. It used to aggravate the crap out of me when we were down in Montgomery passing laws, and there would be people come to speak out against something we were going to do that was tough on crime, and they were more concerned about the criminal than they ever were about the victim. We had a great group down there called Vocal that was a victims' rights organization that stepped in all the time to speak to what it means to the victims that you're about to try and pass a law like this. We didn't do it. It was usually Democrats bringing something up that we were going to vote down, but they always spoke to it and did a great job. Let me tell you, though, people are sick of it. I'm going to change up the order in my pile of resources here. So you've got crime on the streets in some places that is directly related to defund the police. I've got a piece here that I pulled from Fox that came out in March. It's a large article. I didn't even get through all this one, but the bottom line is this. There's a retired police chief named Tom Weitzel who used to be in Riverside, Illinois, which I believe is a suburb of Chicago. And he said there's police executives all around the United States trying to tell you defund the police is over, but it's not. He said it depends on where you are, but it's gaining speed again, and it's gaining speed in a new format. And he pointed out this. He said, there are jurisdictions right now in this nation that are stripping police departments of their authority and their policies in order to proactively protect the community. So what he's saying there basically is that politicians are saying, okay, defund the police doesn't work, but we don't like the police. So what do we do about it? Let's make sure that we restrict what they can and cannot do. We saw this in Birmingham, by the way, just a couple of years ago. If you recall, Liberal Mayor Randall Woodfin came out and said, in Birmingham, we will no longer have no-knock warrants. So now you have to announce yourself on every, even though you know you've got a warrant, you can enter the premises, and you know there's a dangerous criminal who has a violent history inside, you have to knock and announce yourself. No more no-knock warrants. He also put a ban on flashbang grenades. Why? What do they hurt? They make a big loud noise and they scare people. Well, somewhere, someone threw a flashbang and it just caused a distressing moment, and so now we can't use it. Let me tell you what that does. Anybody out there right now in blue who's ever gone in on a breach team or entered a premises where you believe there may be a violent criminal with weapons, armed and dangerous, you know what does a flashbang do? It disrupts their attention. It distracts them from the ability to shoot at you. It removes the danger from the police officer being the immediate target, and it focuses everything on the flashbang. A flashbang does nothing but give the police an edge. But he took it away. Why? Because it was scary. Because it's just, we're not going to do that anymore. We're just not, in Birmingham, we won't do that anymore. Meanwhile, he's excusing crime. The mayor of Birmingham actually decided to blanket pardon everybody who had been arrested for marijuana possession dating back to 1992. I'm not sure he was even alive in 1992. But he's going to reach back and just excuse all this. So basically, he's willing to excuse crimes and make it harder to police. Maybe even make it more dangerous to police. Well, this Fox News article that I've got right here talks about that very thing. It says certain politicians have gotten in office and now have the power to limit police ability to patrol and investigate. It points out that back in 2020, crime began spiraling. The post-George Floyd stuff, that everybody stepped aside. Oh, Lord, we got to make sure you kneel down with them or they might come and protest. And they did. And they burned whole city blocks. The U.S. went through this major, how did this even happen, by the way? Something happens to George Floyd and the far side of the nation, and it's awful. I get it. Somebody died. Let's don't try and pretend, though, he was a saint. But he dies through the course of the arrest, and for some reason they can riot in Atlanta, and everybody goes, quick, defund the police, because the police are mean. They're bad. They do bad things. What happens then? The spiraling effect is streets become less safe. Criminals feel empowered. Victims recognize that they are no longer the real concern. So here we are, looking at safe streets, and people are getting tired of it. Got a story here. This also came from Fox. Dateline just 10 days ago. Connecticut residents form their own armed group to defend against violent crime. Picture a hybrid of a neighborhood watch / civilian police force. The so-called self-defense brigade is made up of 40 legally armed citizens voluntarily patrolling the streets of Hartford's North End wearing body cameras on nights and weekends. So they're armed. They're carrying cameras. They have upwards of 75 home surveillance cameras around the neighborhood. And they have drones, like up to a dozen drones. They have people actually monitoring the drone feed. This is quite the operation. It's run mostly by volunteers, but they've all been trained. Says the Democratic machine, says the guy who formed it, a guy named, what's his name, Lewis something. Here, I'll find it in a minute. But Cornell Lewis, here he is. He's the guy who founded it. By the way, in case you're wondering, the demographic is they're black and they're tired of the Democrats in their community just completely dissing them. In fact, Cornell Lewis himself said the Democratic machine in Hartford is either unwilling or unable or incapable of doing it. And people are paying tax dollars but getting no kind of service. We want the people to understand, number one, that self-defense is not a dirty word. The Hartford Democrat mayor, whose name is Arunan Aralalapalalam or something like that, has denounced the group. Calls them vigilantes. He says, our community has seen so much pain and trauma. Which, by the way, if you're the mayor and you're presiding over a city that you say by your own admission is experiencing pain and trauma, maybe you ought to do something about it. But he says, we don't need people walking around the streets with guns trying to take the law into their own hands. All of them are trained in the discipline of legal security. All of them have legal permits to carry. All of them are caring about their neighborhood. They live there. They know the people. They wear body cameras. They have drones. And they turn the evidence over to the police once they detain someone if they have to. I'm telling you, you're going to see more of that. You're going to see a lot more of that. Because defund the police is not dead. What you're seeing right now is they may be starting to upfund. They may be starting to rehire. They may be trying to try and pretend that they really didn't mean it that way. But what they do is they come back and they begin to make policy changes and make it harder to police. It's the same thing. And I can tell you, as a soldier who's been downrange, rules of engagement can become oppressive at some point. And that's what they're doing. They're changing the ROE on the police, and they're making it harder to do their jobs. All right, Big Rig, move me towards a break, brother. We'll take that break. We'll come right back. I got more on this. Like, have you heard what's happening in New York on the subways? And then I'm going to tell you about the two cities in Alabama that came out in the top five crime cities in the nation. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like making common sense like a superpower. John C. from Madison says, we threw an artillery simulator into our commander's tent when we had war games. Just a huge firecracker. What's the difference between that and a flashbang? Whew, dude. Those arty simulators, that's some serious fireworks right there. And especially if you got the kind that whistle first. But I agree. By the way, almost got in big trouble with arty simulators. Good thing they didn't catch me. They tried to catch me. I was young and fast. And I think I probably had there's a story here, but I think I probably had about half a dozen arty simulators, and the opposing patrol base never knew what hit them. It was fun.
So like little M80s?
Oh, no, little M80s. These things are the size of your hand. I mean, it's bigger than it's like the size of a water bottle.
Oh, wow.
And when this thing goes off, it sounds like artillery is landing in your perimeter. Oh, my God. Yeah. Bert Moa's Crossroads says, so the streets of Los Angeles are so unsafe that a Secret Service agent who was there as part of the recent Biden-Obama fundraiser got held up at gunpoint. Yeah, I agree. He says, not sure this speaks so well for the Secret Service or that agent. Well, I mean, listen, if it's an armed robbery, the question is, did he have an opportunity? I don't know. But anyway, the bottom line is, yeah, that happened. John from Huntsville is guessing that it's Birmingham, Montgomery. I'll be right back to that. Bobby from Moulton sends me a story on Fox. I'm not on that topic right now, but yeah, I agree that Karine Jean-Pierre is way out of her league. There's only so many times you can lie for the president. All right, so in New York City right now, they're finally considering getting rid of masks. Just on the transit system, though. You can't wear a mask on the subway. What? Okay, if you haven't seen it, there were a bunch of pro-Palestinian anti-Semites wearing their masks that got onto a subway the other day and started yelling for Jews to get off. Of course, they're wearing their masks because, you know, safer that way. I got news. The whole masking thing needs to be off in public, period. But they're looking at a partial ban on masks just in the subway system. Look, stop making it harder for police. Don't say, okay, once you cross that threshold, then you can wear a mask. But when you're in this one, just say masks are off. How about that? Stop making it hard for the police to actually do their jobs. There is a serious piece of legislation right now that is looking at being brought in the next legislative session in Alabama. And I'm questioning how I feel about it, and I want to talk to one of the sponsors here in a few minutes. State Senator Will Barfoot will be calling in, and he's a great guy. My big government side of me is like, or my anti-big government side of me is a little concerned, because what it would do would be literally allow for the state to take over in the event of local law enforcement not doing its job. Now, it's more detailed than that, but we're going to talk to Will Barfoot right at the top of the hour. I want y'all to key in on this and tell me what you think. Is it too much? Does it remove local municipal authority? Does it encroach where it shouldn't? Does the state need to stay out of it and say, get that fixed, or what? In the meantime, 1819 News has a new piece that came out 2 days ago. Jim Ziegler wrote this, actually. He says, Alabama is number one in the alphabet. We're also used to competing for the top five nationally in things like college football, basketball, heavyweight boxing, the deep sea fishing rodeo, space programs, and other things. He says, what am I leaving out? He said, but now two Alabama cities have scored in the top five nationally in a field that we do not want and that we need to do something about strongly, unequivocally, and now, he says. The two cities that are side by side in Alabama's most populous county have hit the national top five in crime, which is not a distinction, but potentially an extinction, he says. It's Bessemer and Birmingham. Bessemer and Birmingham. So the Wetumpka Herald printed this, and it came out that, where was this poll? I'm trying to think where this it may have been on Fox. Bessemer, Alabama, number one on the list. With only 27,000 residents, Bessemer is the most dangerous city in America. You have a 1 in 9 chance of being a crime victim. Wow. And then you got number two, Memphis. Number three, St. Louis. Number four, Detroit. Number five, Birmingham, Alabama. They're both in the same county in the same state. Birmingham, Alabama says local authorities have attempted to reduce crime in Birmingham, but it still remains higher than 98% of the country. Good Lord. Ziegler points out this. He says all five of these cities that are on the top five list are governed by Democrats. And Bessemer and Birmingham technically have nonpartisan elections, but everybody knows that their local political reality is Democrat dominated. In Bessemer and Birmingham, only Democrats are elected as mayors and in the council seats. Says woke policies, softness on victims' rights, weak support for law enforcement, lenient bail and sentencing, no leadership on preventing crime, blaming everyone but themselves, no accountability. Birmingham and Bessemer tops in the list. This is awful. I love Birmingham. I love the state, period, but I love Birmingham. A lot of my growing up there, I've said it before. And I look at some of the high crime areas that I used to run around in. I'm thinking, my gosh. And you have to, at some point, you have to realize the public, like that group from Connecticut that I just had the story on a few minutes ago. The group from Connecticut that's decided they're going to take matters into their own hands and form their own policing and put up their own cameras and monitor it themselves with volunteers and wear their body cams and go out there and patrol their own streets because they can't get it from the tax dollars they're paying, but they still got to pay the taxes. And so you wonder, how in the world do people keep electing the same folks over and over again who do nothing except enact the same policies and continue to go soft on crime? Well, the question is, what do we do about it? What do we do about it? If you've got a situation like, how about the sheriff of Jefferson County, whose brother is involved in gambling, who announced that he will not enforce gambling laws. Well, why is he allowed to stay in the office then? Or what about cities, even in Alabama, who chose to defund the police? And then they wonder why crime is what it is. Should the state do something? Mike from Athens texted in, said the state, as in state troopers, who are already super undermanned. I don't know, man. I'm not sure how the plan's going to work. Then again, they made us replace the leadership. We'll talk here in a few minutes to State Senator Will Barfoot, who has the bill. It's a proposed bill that's looking at coming out in the next legislative session. I'm curious how he thinks the implementation could work. Y'all stay tuned. We'll tell you all about it.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three. We're in Dipper number two. I'm talking about safe streets. By the way, before I forget, I'll go ahead and tell you right now, we have confirmed that Secretary of State Wes Allen will be on the show with us tomorrow, talking about his concerns about the Biden administration trying to get illegals the opportunity to vote. So that's tomorrow at probably 3 o'clock. But let me just move on now. The Dipper I'm doing on safe streets. It's apparent that we have a problem when out of the top five, two of the cities come from Alabama. Oh, by the way, they come from the same county, Bessemer and Birmingham. Defund the police has been an issue. Soft on crime, Democrat liberal policies has been an issue. And then you look at some of the policies they put in place that just make it hard to do policing in general, kind of like rules of engagement on soldiers. You make it hard to police. Next thing you know, the streets are less safe. But then you also just have to be concerned about, all right, what do we do? Because it reflects on the whole state. All right, that's enough of me talking.
Let me bring on somebody who's in the thick of this. So State Senator Will Barfoot hails from the Pike Road area down near Montgomery. He's got his degree from Auburn University at Montgomery, his law degree from Jones Law School. He's a practicing attorney down there in 2018. Right as I left, Will was elected to the Alabama Senate. He represents, I think it's District 25, Crenshaw, Elmore, Montgomery counties. He's currently, I believe, vice chair of Judiciary, which I used to be vice chair of Judiciary Committee. Let me welcome him on, State Senator Will Barfoot. How are you?
Ah, man, great. Glad to be with you. I appreciate the introduction.
Absolutely, man. Well, thank you. Thanks for your service to the state. I know that generally speaking, you're considered one of the more conservative members of the Senate Republican Caucus. You've got a bill right now. WSFA has got the story that I pulled. You're looking at you and Representative Reid Ingram floating a bill that would allow the attorney general or the governor or somebody at state level to sort of take over a local police force if they're not getting it done. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so it is a statewide bill. You're correct in that, and it would allow the attorney general or the governor in consultation with one another to assess whether or not municipality police force is performing like they should. And several of those criteria are, you know, whether or not the rate of employment or the participation at the law enforcement officers, if it drops below 30% or less of the average of law enforcement employed by that department for preceding 10 years, that's one of the factors. And so, consultation with the district attorney's office and in the county of which that municipality is, and certainly with the sheriff and with victims of crime. So level of discussion between the attorney general and the governor as to what's going on in a specific municipality and as to whether or not they believe that the citizens of that municipality are being well served, and if not, could appoint an acting interim police chief that would be answerable, that would have to answer to the appointing authority and not the mayor or the city council.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I know that, like, we already take over school systems where they have a failing level that needs to be addressed. We've done it for Montgomery.
Yep.
And so I can see some precedent on this to some degree, but then, you know, my anti-big government side of me gets concerned about removing local authority and sort of usurping local authority. And so how do you measure that against big government policymaking as opposed to limited government policymaking?
Yeah, no, fair assessment. You know, was President Reagan that said the 9 scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Yeah.
And so, you know, while I certainly agree with that, there are times that local municipalities are not doing all that they can do to provide protection for their citizens. And I think that it's incumbent upon us to step in and address that. You know, Phil, you were in the Senate for a while, and you know that legislation that's filed rarely from the filing time and the language in there, it gets amended, it gets looked at, and, you know, make tweaks and changes. And I suspect, like any other piece of legislation, you know, there'll be an opportunity to tweak some of this. But certainly the crime around the state, specifically the lens I look through representing Crenshaw, Montgomery, and Elmore County and the municipality of Montgomery, an upsurge in crime, at least reported crime. I think it's become more of an issue here lately, especially when you've seen, you know, 12-year-old little girl that, you know, was shots fired at her house and died here not long ago. You had an innocent bystander driving down the Atlanta Highway, a place that generally people would consider relatively safe, and struck by a bullet and some gunfire. Been, I think, 7 folks arrested here recently and is paralyzed for the rest of her life. And that certainly brought some of this to the forefront. You know, I will admit, readily admit, I don't have all the answers. I'm not in law enforcement. My daddy retired from Montgomery Police Department in 1981. I had another uncle that was a policeman in Montgomery and 2 uncles that were troopers. I haven't worn the badge, but the part of the problem, and this is nationwide, this is not just Alabama, it's not just Montgomery, but we don't respect law enforcement anymore. And that's unfortunate. And whenever you're If you're a law enforcement officer and you get up every day and you realize that you have you might not come home that day.
And
that's a big deficit, and that's always been there. But when you couple that with, not only may I not come home, but number two, I may not have the support of, and I'm talking broadly, leadership. Number three, I might get sued. Or number four, I might get prosecuted for doing my job. And combined with social media and the news that makes law enforcement officers the villain all the time. I don't know why anybody would want to be in law enforcement. I mean, I credit them, I thank them, and they're do a great service for us. But that'd be a difficult decision to make, and I would hope my children wouldn't be in that position. So
let me ask you this, and yeah, this show is real big on honoring the men and women in blue. So you've got some requirements that have to be met. I heard you say it right now, as proposed, the legislation would say if the police force is down by 30%, in other words, they're operating at a low manning level. I assume there would have to be criminal statistics, somewhere in the region or area. All that to say, are you going to bring in troops, so to speak? Are you going to bring in National Guard? Are you going to bring in state troopers who are already undermanned to plus up the force? Or are you just going to change out the leadership if your bill passes?
Well, I think you change out the leadership. That's number one. And I give probably a poor analogy, but you could have George Patton, General Patton, as the police chief of whatever municipality it is. But if he's handcuffed from leadership above him and is told that he can't do certain things, that he can't utilize his knowledge and experience to deal with the crime, then it's probably not going to be successful. So this would decouple that police chief, whoever it may be, and whatever municipality it may come from, and have them answerable to someone who is in the executive branch, either the governor or the attorney general, to where they could, again, without trampling on the Constitution. Let's be clear about that, because we're big defender of the Constitution and the rights people have. But to go out and do their job and being able to instill confidence in those men and women that are under that particular chief, and I think this didn't get this way overnight, and so it will take a while. You put somebody in charge who knows what they're doing, who has the ability to combat crime and the willingness, they're willing to combat the crime, and you build respect for that office again. You build respect for law enforcement in that community, and those law enforcement officers, I think, will stay and will slowly start to come back. And that's how you build that force up.
Okay, so last couple of minutes here we have together, let me ask you this. In your proposed legislation, let's say, and God forbid, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, maybe not in our lifetime, but let's say that the legislature is, or that matter, state government, is taken over by more liberal interests, as opposed to the Republican supermajority we have right now. Let's say that we have a day in the future when Democrats have it controlled again. Do you see this being used against more conservative law enforcement, like going in and removing someone because they can? And because they've been too hard on crime?
Well, I there's always a flip side of every coin. You're correct about that. But, one of the factors to be considered in that appointment of a interim police chief would be that the number of officers of that department declined by 30% or more. And so, I don't think, you take some areas of the state, for instance, Elmore County, which I'm pleased to be able to represent, the sheriff's office up there and the municipalities up there do a great job. The police officers that are in Montgomery are still a part of the force here. They're trying the best that they can. They've just got their hands tied. So the answer to your question is, while anything is possible, and yes, that's always a possibility, I think that you won't, in those areas that you allow law enforcement officers to do what they're supposed to do, what they're trained to do, I don't think there's a reduction in those forces typically, and so therefore this law wouldn't come into play.
Okay. Then last question with about a minute. We've got a police chief then that gets sort of relieved. Is he actually, he or she actually vacating the position? Are they fired, or are they just set aside and put on some type of, you know, unpaid leave or paid leave for that matter, while the state appointee takes over?
Great question. It's not specifically addressed in the bill, but you know, police chiefs are political appointments, at least in Montgomery, and I suspect them, you know, throughout the state, that those are appointees of the mayor. And so it would be up to the mayor in that municipality as to whether or not they retained that former police chief on the staff, or whether they allowed him to or her to go somewhere else.
Wow. All right. Well, more to come. You think you and Representative Ingram, who I think has a background in law enforcement, are going to bring this in the next session?
Yep, we've already pre-filed it. Representative Ingram has, and so have I. And as I said, we are going to have continued conversations with those men and women in law enforcement who have the experience that that have combated crime before, and we're going to continue to listen to them. And this piece of legislation will be shaped appropriately as we go through the process.
All right. Well, hey, State Senator Will Barfoot, appreciate you making some time. This is going to be interesting. I look forward to seeing how it plays out. Keep us posted. All right.
Thanks so much.
All right. Take care. That's interesting, man. That's very interesting. Yeah, these resources are out there. If you want to see the story from WSFA about that bill, it's up on the resources tab on the rightsideradio.org website. All right. Take us to a break, Big Rig. We'll do that right now. We'll come on back. I think it's about time to kick in some adventures in woke world. Oh, y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.